Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya. Bhaktivedanta Sanskrit Prabhupada Ki Jai, Namachar Das Thakur Ki Jai, Prem Sigaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shwasati Gaura Bhakta Rindagi Jai, Sri Sri Radha Krishna, Gopa Gopidas Shama Kunda Radha Kata Gidi Gopradan Ki Jai, Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Navadup Dham Ki Jai, Ganga Shumana Tosi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Ananda Kodi Vaishnava Rindagi Jai, Samavetta Bhakta Rindagi Jai, Gopremanandi. All glories to the Sama devotees, all glories to the Sama devotees, all glories to the Sama devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vishnu Bhutale Srimadi Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanamane. Namaste, Saraswati Devi Gauravani Prachalane Nirvishesha Shunjavadi Pashtacha Desha Tarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 10 Chapter 29 Verse 24 Bartu Susrushanam Strinam Paro Dharma Hyamayaya Tat Bandhu Namcha Kalyana Prajanam Shanu Poshanam. Bartu, of one's husband, Sushrushanam, faithful service, Strinam, for women, Para, highest Dharma, religious duty, he, indeed, Maya, Amayaya, without duplicity, tat bandunam, to the relatives of their husband. Cha, and kalyana, doing good, prajanam, of their offspring. Cha, and anuposhanam, care. Translation, the highest religious duty for a woman is to sincerely serve her husband, behave well towards her husband's family, and take care of her children. Purport, Srila Jiva Goswami astutely points out here that the gopi's real eternal husband is Lord Krishna, not their so-called husbands at home, who falsely consider the gopis their property. Thus, a strict interpretation of the word mayaya, without illusion, reveals that the supreme religious duty for the gopis is to serve Sri Krishna, their real lover. Text 25. Women who desire a good destination in the next life should never abandon a husband who has not fallen from his religious standards, even if he is obnoxious, unfortunate, old, unintelligent, sickly, or poor. Purport, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti quotes a similar statement from Smriti Shastra, Patyam tu apatitam bhajet. One should serve a master who is not fallen. Sometimes a foolish argument is given that even if a husband falls down from spiritual principles, his wife should continue to follow him since he is her guru. In fact, since Krishna consciousness cannot be subordinated to any other religious principle, a guru who engages his followers in materialistic sinful activities loses his status as a guru. Srila Prabhupada states that the system of a monarchy collapsed in Europe because the monarchs abused and exploited their position. Similarly, in the Western world, men have abused and exploited women, and now there is a popular movement in which women reject the authority of their husbands. Ideally, men should be staunch in spiritual life and give pure, sincere guidance to the women under their care. The gopis, of course, being on the highest platform of spiritual perfection, were transcendental to all positive and negative religious considerations. In other words, they were the eternal lovers of the absolute truth. For a woman from a respectable family, petty adulterous affairs are always condemned. They bar her from heaven, ruin her reputation, and bring her difficulty and fear. So, in these verses, Krishna is stating the general principle of the Varnashram system and Dharma, and particularly the woman's Dharma. So the woman's Dharma is to serve the husband, respect the family members, and take care of the children. And even if the husband is old or sick or whatever, and he has faults, still the wife should not abandon the husband and serve him. Very nicely. And if she engages in affairs outside of her marriage, that is a cause of sin, hellish punishment, or loss of reputation, everything else, all the bad things happen. So this is the standard of the, we say, the Varnashram system, a certain level of conduct called Dharma. And these are the normal standards that people follow. And these standards are enforced by the king. They are stated very often in the scriptures and inculcated within the various families and the various varnas. So this principle goes for all the different varnas, whether Sudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, or Brahmana. The woman has similar duties of dharma in all cases, regardless of varna. So very strong principle for the women to follow. And of course there are good reasons for this. In normal society, the family unit has to be kept stable. So therefore we need a good stable family with raising children properly, etc. And in this way the children grow up properly, and they are also productive in society. So we see in the Bhagavad Gita
There is some arguments given by Arjuna why he shouldn't engage in the war, because then he will kill the husbands, and then the wives are left without husbands, and then they may be subject to intercaste marriages, etc. And this will cause a disruption of dharma, because not only this is, gives a general principle here, but then there are details about this whole concept of the women and the family and who they should marry, etc. They have to marry in a certain type of family in the proper varna, etc. Not a higher varna, not a lower varna, etc. And in a different gotra. So there are many complicated rules to follow. And if they're not followed, then the population degrades ultimately. The children are not raised properly, and consequently the population becomes unproductive. There are rules in the varnashram system to keep the society very stable and the population very, we can say, stable as well, psychologically or mentally or whatever. And of course this affects the economy as well. So there are many reasons for all these different rules within the society. So this is one level, and broadly we all put this into the category of karma yoga. And of course in the third chapter Krishna recommends that you have to follow karma yoga. This is a good system to follow. But later on then we see he says you give up karma yoga for bhakti yoga. If you can't do jnana or bhakti, then you do karma yoga. But if you can do bhakti yoga, then you do this instead. In other words, it's a stronger principle, the principle of bhakti over karma. And of course, even jnana is superior to karma. So once one sticks to the principles of jnana and is firm in that, then one gives up the principles of karma also. So therefore the principles of dharma, though they are emphasized in general in society, they are not absolute and they're subject to some change. But the rejection of the dharma also depends on the qualification of the person. So if the person is not qualified, he cannot give up those principles of dharma. In the Bhagavad Gita, of course, or not in the Bhagavatam, it is said that one continues to follow the principles of karma, that is varnashram system, as long as one does not develop firm faith in hearing the topics of the Lord. So if faith is developed, then this is a sign we can start engaging in bhakti and giving up those principles of karma yoga. To what degree? Should we give them up completely or whatever? So the principle is we should not be too attached to them. And we follow them for certain reasons. We follow them to encourage other people to follow. If they don't have faith in bhakti, let them at least follow the rules of dharma, etc. To set an example for others, in other words. So that is one reason for following. Another is, of course, that all the rules are not unfavorable for bhakti. Some of the rules are favorable for bhakti. So therefore, as I said, the rules of karma are there to create a stable family. So a stable family is also favorable for bhakti. If we have an unstable family unit with the children and the wife and everybody else all arguing with each other, very difficult to practice bhakti properly. So therefore, the rules are followed to the extent that they're favorable for bhakti. So in other words, we don't reject the rules of karma yoga and varnashram outright. Those which are favorable for bhakti are also followed. So this is generally what we see in Lord Chaitanya's movement. Many of Lord Chaitanya's followers were, of course, they were all devotees, chanting the holy name and worshipping the deity, etc. But they did not give up the varnashram system. They followed. They followed that system, plus they also did devotional service without any obstacle of the two. In other words, they freely did both. Of course, if there's some contradiction, for instance, they avoid those things, like worship of devatas, doing sacrifices for material results. So they avoided all of that, obviously. And they did those things, which were favorable for their existence in the material world. Still, the principle of bhakti is there, that it supersedes in some cases the principle. So therefore, where there is a choice, then we may give up those rules also. And that's why, that in that sense, at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, sarva dharman parityaja, give up all dharmas, including your swadharma, the rules of your occupation and the rules that you follow in your particular varna, give them all up and simply worship me. So, to the extent that they are unfavorable, then one would give them up. But we don't see at the same time people completely rejecting the whole system and doing everything. And we see even Lord Chaitanya himself, what did he do? He took sannyas, who's in the Varnashram system, so he followed to some degree. And at the same time he's saying, oh, you know, all this dharma is much lower and bhakti is higher, etc. In his teachings he says this. The principle is the ultimate. If there is a choice we have to make, we may have to reject those lower rules for some reason or other. Here we have a case of the gopis. So he's saying, well, you should be following dharma. Now, of course, the same rules don't apply to the people in Vrindavan, even though superficially they're following rules of dharma, they're siddha devotees, so they don't really have to follow that system, which is lower than jnana or bhakti, lower than sadhana bhakti or even jnana. And so the people of Vrindavan are actually higher than even sadhana bhakti, what to speak of jnana or karma yoga, so they don't have to follow any normal dharma and everything like that. But there is an appearance of dharma, because Krishna has a human form and he acts as a human. He follows the principles of dharma, etc. He has a certain varna. Here he's acting as a vaishya. Later he acts as a kshatriya. So when the Lord appears within the material world, he acts within the system set up, the system of dharma. And generally he does not contradict that system. So it is not improper that he speaks from that point of view. Later, of course, when he's in Dwarka, he was very much obligated to follow those principles, because he's like the king. Even though Ugrasena is the king, he actually is the ruler. So he sets an example for everybody else very nicely and follows the system. And he meditates on Gayatri Mantra in the morning, even though he doesn't have to meditate on himself. He does all these different things, follows the whole system, and he even does sacrifices and Agnihotras, etc. in the morning. He does all these activities, though he doesn't have to do them at all. So in Vrindavan also, the people are following dharma. Here they are acting as, everyone's acting within the Vaishya community. Then they're main activities to herd the cows and to take the products and use those for their livelihood. And they follow the principles of dharma like everybody else. So though they are nitya siddhas or sadhana siddhas, etc., they follow an appearance of dharma under normal circumstances. And part of that is these rules here for the women. So the women have a certain position and they act according to that position. But there is a point where there's a little contradiction to the dharma. And that comes here with the gopis. It does not occur with the cowherd boys or the elders. There's no contradiction of dharma there at all. But with the gopis and with Madhurya Rasa in Vrindavan, then we get this contradiction arising. How can these gopis become attracted to Krishna? Some of them are married. And even if they're not married, they have to take permission from their parents. So how can they run out into the middle of the night when Krishna plays his flute? It's not good conduct in any case for young girls. So on the other hand, it is how is Madhurya Rasa to be expressed otherwise? And Madhurya Rasa is the highest rasa, most intense rasa. Here the choice of the gopis is we follow the rules of Dharma, which are in one sense, there, but they're not the absolute. And then there is the attraction to Krishna. So that attraction to Krishna overrides everything else, all these other considerations. The appearance of Dharma is contradicted by their attraction to Krishna. But nothing wrong with that, because as is pointed out, actually, the gopis are the natural wives of Krishna. They naturally belong to him and nobody else. And the appearance of Dharma there is, and being married to other men actually is, in one sense, an appearance only. It is false. So their actual Bhartu, or the husband, is actually Krishna. And then the situation is resolved. So there's, of course, some explanation of how this takes place. The idea, the concept of being married to someone else is there, that we have husbands, etc. But then one explanation given by Jiva Goswami is actually this is an appearance of being married. So actually the bodies of these gopis who were with their husbands during the daytime were not the real gopis. There were some other forms. And actually they didn't associate with these so-called husbands at all. They didn't associate with them at all because they were false forms of gopis. And only when Krishna played his flute at night, then the actual gopis emerged, and these are the ones that were with Krishna. So in other words, they had no association with these husbands at all. So that's one explanation given, that they were actually false forms, and they were not the real gopis at all. So in any case, this would solve the problem of their so-called breaking the principles of Dharma, etc. And the other way of resolving it, of course, is that after this point, then finally they married Krishna. Just as Krishna married the 16,108 queens in Dwarka, then there was no kritisas. It was marriage according to Kshatriya principles. So in one version we have of Jiva Goswami, and it's mentioned in the Gopal Champu. He returns to Vrindavan. Of course, that's also mentioned in Padma Purana. He goes back to Vrindavan as well. And then he married all of these gopis, actually, in their true forms. And the false forms disappeared completely. And so the true forms of the gopis, they married Krishna. And then there was all these, Krishna expanded himself for all these different gopis. And so, in this way, again, there's an appearance of following Dharma, etc., like that. So at this point, of course, then the gopis themselves are thinking that this is breaking the principles of Dharma, etc. But still, the attraction to Krishna is very, very strong. So they overcome that feeling and they offer themselves to Krishna. So that is a sign of their intense love for Krishna, that they give everything else up simply for him. Even the sense of Dharma and family members, etc. So anyway, in these verses, Krishna is outlining the obstacle that they have to overcome. One, of course, is themselves psychologically, that they have to reject their parents, husbands, children, etc., etc. The other, of course, is that then they meet with the criticism that they are not following Dharma. They're not chaste women, etc. So that's the other problem that arises from this type of relationship. Yet, the gopis were willing to forget about all that. because of their attraction to Krishna. So here we have Krishna stating the great obstacle to their coming to Krishna. And even after this is all stated, and then whatever, still the gopis refuse to leave. So this shows the intensity of their love. But ultimately, though the principles of Dharma are there and they are followed, we see here that the highest principle is surrender to Krishna. So if there's some impediment to that, the surrender to Krishna is a stronger principle, and that the opposition to the surrender to Krishna, that is weaker. So therefore, in that sense, it's justified that they do leave because of that strong attraction to Krishna, and everything else is obstacle to that. Of course, we say that normally this does not take place. This is an example of lila, where the obstacles themselves are not real obstacles because they're, say, created by Krishna's yoga maya, etc., to illustrate this. But in the material world, we may not get examples like this, but we do have other examples, such as Prahlad and his father. So the son should obey the father, ideally, in Dharma. But then Hiranyakasipu was a demon, and he says, you can't worship Vishnu, and then you have to obey me. But then Prahlad refuses. I cannot give up the worship of Vishnu. And he starts telling his friends in the school to all worship Vishnu. He disobeys his father against the principles of Dharma, in one sense. You should obey your father, etc. But higher principle is there that one should surrender to the Lord. So therefore, no fault on the part of Prahlad also. In spite of the fact that the normal principles of Dharma are contradicted, etc. So we find other examples as well where that happens. So that is a higher principle. Of course, we also try to, other principle of course is, we try not to disturb other living entities. So as much as possible, we should carry out our principle of preaching, etc., in such a way that we don't disturb other living entities. And we have to try to accommodate other people within our preaching in such a way that they don't get too disturbed by the activities of bhakti. And so not all people are going to be favorable, and there will be opposition. So according to the time and circumstance, we have to preach in certain ways so that we don't disturb them.
What do we find that, what about the husbands? Were they aware that their wives were going to take part in Rasa Lila, or they were just put in Ugamaya?
No, they were not aware. It is also stated in one place that the husbands had no animosity towards Krishna at all, with the understanding that they were completely unaware that the gopis went out, because there were some gopis by their sides all night. The false forms were there. So there was no problem for them at all in that sense.
Varnashram Dharma system are very clearly made, no intercaste marriage, etc., but in ISKCON still we say we are Vaishnavas, no need to follow. Varnashram devotees get married to other devotees from different backgrounds, cultures, and we also find many problems in devotee marriages, like divorce, etc., because not following standards of Varnashram. Well, it's not that we just reject outright everything in the Varnashram. As I said, what is favorable we can follow as long as there's no objection. So, of course, then the other is whether one should marry a non-devotee. In some cases it may be okay, in some cases it may be very unfavorable if the person is completely opposed, so that we have to make some sort of compromise there. So it is not that ISKCON is suggesting marriage outside of Varna or whatever like that. It's a principle, but it may happen if they cannot find a proper person within the same Varna or whatever, who's a devotee, etc.
Now, even if they are within the same varna and whatever, and they do follow the rules, there is also possibility of divorce or whatever. So it's not that all the divorces only take place because of mixed marriages. Even within the same varna, we do have divorces. I think in India, I don't know what the statistics are, which would be very interesting to see how many varna marriages have divorce and how many non-varna marriages have divorce. It may be very interesting to see. I don't know what the statistics are. Anybody know? Huh? Either way, there's no difference. Yeah. So even if you do take the precaution of same varna, etc., you can still have problems. And of course, there's many reasons for that. So it's not simply the varna as the problem. And if not just ISKCON, it's the world in general and India in general, I think also. Now, probably there's less divorces in India than there are in other countries because of the social problem. That doesn't mean that there's no problem in marriage. This is, they don't get divorced. Legally, they don't get divorced, but they may have other arrangements they make or whatever. So, in other words, the whole idea of marriage, etc., has to be done very carefully, and then there has to be some flexibility within the marriage, the partners themselves in the marriage. It's not strictly a Vaishnava thing. It's a matter of personality and how they can work together, etc. So, varna, of course, is one consideration, but not the only consideration.
There is a verse in Shrimad Bhagavatam, it said it like Tavat Karmani Kurvitana Nirvedata Yavata Mat Katha Shravanaduva Shraddhaivana Najayate. So in that verse it said that one should continue the duty, his prescribed duty, as long as he develops a faith.
Until he develops faith.
Faith, yeah. Mat Katha Shravanaduva
Shraddhaivana. And when he develops a faith, then he is not obliged to follow the same rules and the same strictness.
Yeah. So here, what kind of level this faith, you know, that one should continue his duty?
The faith that if he does that and he neglects some duties, that he's not committing a sin. So some people, they say, oh, I can't stop this because if I do, I'll be sinful. I cannot stop doing the Sanjivandana, I cannot stop doing the Pitrakarmas because I'll be sinful. So if he has that faith, and it's stronger than his faith that by doing bhakti everything is covered, then his faith has not developed. So let him do those karmas. And when he has faith that doing bhakti is superior, then and if he neglects some of those duties, he's not sinful, then he's in a higher level.
And you explained about Krishna's pastime in Dwaraka, that Krishna is doing all the duties, like, you know, he was, we can say, almost following the Varnashrama Dharma in Dwaraka. So what is his teaching actually?
Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita also, whatever the great man does, others follow. So therefore, you know, I also have to follow the system. You know?
Yeah. So by this, is he teaching that, you know, yes, you should follow your dharma, means so-called dharma, Varnashrama Dharma. Is it something like that?
What's that?
By this, he is teaching that, you know, you should follow the Varnashrama Dharma.
Yeah. Well, this is the whole system set up by the Manus 14 times in the day of Brahma and their descendants, who are all the kings. And then the whole Bhagavatam starts with Swayambhuva Manu in the third canto, and it goes through, you know, like this. And then we have Priyavrata and Dhruva and all these kings, da da da, going down, Prithu, all this. And then finally come to ninth canto, and we get dynasty of Moon Dynasty, and we get Krishna coming there. Yeah. So all of this is showing the descendants of the different Manus. And they are, one of their principles is to institute Dharma. Varnashram system for everybody, and they follow themselves. But of course, the Manus are also devotees of the Lord. So the other principle is to establish bhakti. So they have to establish bhakti also, so they do both things. So for the people in general who don't have the faith, then let them at least follow karma yoga. That's the basic system. Then, if they can follow bhakti, fine, let them do the bhakti. And where that bhakti, the varnas and social system, dharma interferes, then they can even reject everything and just do the bhakti. So we have persons like Rishabhadev or something like that who walks off to the forest and just forgets about all duties in the system. Who's that?
So this is this pastime. Krishna was 8 years. From 8 years to 11 years, he had this rasa krida. We find that married gopis also participate in the. So they had what relationship with him? They can't be elderly girls dancing with a younger boy and tell, "I love you." And
well, those are generally younger than Krishna.
Younger gopis.
Yeah, which means they were married quite early, obviously. Some of them.
Child
not all of them, but some of them were married. Some were unmarried. We find the previous year the Kumaris were the unmarried gopis, so they were praying to Katyayani to have Krishna as their husband. So they were unmarried. Others were married.
What is you are quoting from Gopala Sambhati in the Jiva Goswami, is that all the Krishna married all the gopis. Okay, so can you say that, and you are saying that, you know, this gopis had one is shadow, another one is original form. So original form was always with Krishna and shadow was with the husband. Is it similar to like Radharani? Radharani also had two forms. One is with in the house with Abhimanyu, another form was with Krishna. Can you say the same kind?
Yeah, I suppose so. Doesn't specifically mention Radharani, it says all the gopis. That's one explanation given, that there was some false forms that were with the husbands, and then the actual gopis were the ones that were with Krishna.
So you know this. So whatever pastimes happen with that Jatila Kutila and Abhimanyu, sometimes we see that even that false Radharani also creates so much. You know this, for the false Radharani creates so much obstacles to increase the love. So how can we accept this, that Radharani is a false Radharani, not the original Radharani?
How can we
accept that Radharani, that for whom this Jatila and Kutila creating so much obstacle to increase the love, that is false Radharani, not the original Radharani?
Well, the false in the sense that the relationship with the husband was not a real relationship, the so-called husband. So in other words, they had husbands, but actually the relationship with them was with a false form, so therefore it was not, they were not actual husbands. And of course, all of this is a very skillful arrangement of, we can say, yoga maya. So at the same time, it has not anything to do with material illusion. It is all spiritual. So even the husbands are spiritual, and the these forms are spiritual in one sense, but they are not the actual gopis. So it's all part of yoga maya for pastimes. It's a Srup Shakti of Krishna operating.
Prahlad was actually propagating God consciousness, because Vishnu was evidently considered as God himself, and Hiranyakashipu was trying to take up, usurp that position by propagating himself as God. But whereas in the pastime of the rasa dance, Krishna is not known as God, but he is just known as yet another Brajavasi. How can we justify that the gopis going over there to him and having a relationship with it's a higher plane or with God himself?
Well, the comparison, of course, is not exactly the same with Prahlad and the gopis, but in the sense of the idea of dharma is overcome only in that sense. The gopis obviously are also not the same as the queens in Dwarka, because the queens in Dwarka also understand Krishna as Supreme Lord, etc. But the idea is that Krishna, whether you know he's God or not know he's God, if that attraction is there and it's very strong, then nothing wrong with it. So it was stated here that out of kama or krodha or bhaya or affection, one could approach the Lord. And in any case, everyone is purified by that. So there's an appearance that the gopis approach Krishna out of kama, not because he's God, but out of kama. And nothing wrong with it, because they would get purified by that. This is from a normal point of view. Similarly, the demons, they approach the Lord out of fear or out of anger, and they get purified also. Ultimately, they can go to the spiritual world or get liberation or whatever. So therefore, even from the superficial point of view of taking the gopis of just not knowing Krishna as God and seeing him as an ordinary person and having feelings for him out of love, conjugal love, nothing wrong with it because the object is Krishna. And therefore, purified. It's completely pure. And not, it cannot be criticized at all. So whether he's, they recognize him as God or not, it doesn't really matter in the sense of whether, it, in any case, it surpasses the concepts of dharma. Now, in most cases, the attraction doesn't, even though they don't know Krishna as God, the friendship or the, you know, the vatsalya rasa or sakya rasa or dasya rasa, there's no contradiction. But the contradiction does arise in madhurya rasa, where the gopis do not see Krishna as God. And of course, they're also, they have another husband or whatever. Then there is some contradiction there. But the attraction is so strong that they forget that. But nothing wrong with that because object is Krishna. Yeah, yeah. Now, of course, the we can say that the gopis' relationship or anybody in Vrindavan's relation, nobody knows Krishna as God, but they're the most exalted devotees, higher than the ones that do know Krishna as God in Dwarka. So that's the we can say the contradictory principle here that ignorance is greater than knowledge because they don't know Krishna as God, but they're on the highest level because the intensity of the love is more.
Maharaj, what role Gotra plays in devotee's life?
Huh?
Gotra. What is the role of Gotra in one's life or in devotee's life?
Well, that's part of it, for, not for devotees. It's that's in the karma system. Every family has a Gotra. I don't know how they trace it back, but certain rishis, I guess, in ancient times, and everyone can trace their family back to some Gotra. That's all. And then you don't marry within your same Gotra. I think that's the principle.
It's more
and I guess each Varna would have different gotras, but some of the rishis actually produce sudra gotras, so I don't know if that happened, even though they're rishis. So they were brahminical, but they end up with having sudra gotras, no? So I don't know how that works out. many rishis, many more than seven. More than seven.
So it's basically predominantly used for karma kanda portion.
Yeah.